Probably we've all heard the statement, the end justifies the means. It is a guiding ethic that's been around for a while. And the reasoning of it goes, supposing that you're not familiar with it, is that if the goal is worthy and it's noble, then it really doesn't matter how you get there. And you can already begin to see some of the difficulties with a philosophy like that. Here's how some of the so-called experts state it. At the beginning of an action, I might not be able to determine whether that action is morally right or wrong, but when the morally right goal is successfully achieved, then the steps which led to it must be morally right too. Wow, that's kind of a mouthful. But the idea is, according to that philosophy, that if the goal in mind is morally right, then whatever steps that take to get to that point are probably okay. You can begin to see that there's some real flawed logic with that kind of a philosophy. And I guess it really gets down to the difficulty when decisions are to be made, how difficult it is, even if you're considering that kind of an ethic, just getting down to doing the right thing. Because as the people of God, I guess our ethic is that you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Never mind this business of whether the goal out there is worthy and whatever you have to do to get to it is the thing that you do. No, it's always the right thing to do. The right thing is the motto of the people of God. Again, that's not always so easily done. And we take, for example, Abraham, who we've been looking at. And I want you to look in Genesis chapter 16, and we're going to look for a moment here in the first two verses. Continue looking at this extraordinary man's life. Here's what we read. Now, Abraham's, or in this case, he has not been called Abraham. Abram's wife had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "Now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid, perhaps I will obtain children through her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. A real dilemma for Abram because of all the promises that God had made to him. I go back to Genesis chapter 15, verse 18, and God explicitly says, "To your descendants I will give this land." To your descendants. Hang on to that word for a little bit. Genesis chapter 13, verses 15 and 16. "All the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants forever." Let me emphasize that word again. "I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered." I kind of wonder if all the times God has spoken His promises to Abraham, and every time He mentioned that word descendants to this childless couple, I wonder if the word descendant didn't sort of just grate like fingernails on a chalkboard. God says descendants, how dare He, because I don't have any children. And so, in spite of the promises that God keeps making to him, there is this insurmountable problem. It says Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. Again, how do you have descendants if you have no children? So here's a man of faith trying to trust God for his promises, but there is a challenging and obvious problem in the whole situation. And you know, you think about promises and problems, and thinking about trying to focus on the promises, but yet problems sometimes easily consume our focus. And I'm sure that's what's going on with Abraham. He wants to believe in the promises of God, but there's this big problem. If I'm going to have descendants and I don't have any children, how is God going to work this whole thing out? And so there comes to be a time when you focus on the problem and you make some bad decisions. And in Abraham's case, one bad decision leads to yet another bad decision. I want you to notice here that says concerning his wife Sarah that she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. Pause for a moment and think about an Egyptian maid. How is it that Abram's wife came to have an Egyptian maid? Go back to chapter 12. We looked at that a few weeks ago. There was a famine in the promised land. Abram made a decision on his own, obviously without consulting God. He's going to head down to Egypt. And that whole story about passing off his wife as his sister, and that whole sordid story that goes on there. And so in Egypt, apparently, his wife acquires a maid. And now she begins to figure prominently in yet another very bad decision. And so if Abraham had not made the bad decision to go into Egypt in the first place, there wouldn't be an Egyptian maid named Hagar who's going to factor into this other really bad decision that's about to be made. I want you to notice in verse 2, Sarai's statement, "The Lord has prevented me from bearing children." The Lord has prevented me from bearing children. You see what's at the heart of what she's saying? God is at fault. I don't have any children, and God's the reason why I don't have them. God has prevented me from bearing children. So God's to blame for the predicament that we're in. And you know, this sets the stage for something disastrous as well. You know, we cannot expect God's miraculous provision when we make Him the cause of the problem. So there's an atmosphere here that's not good at all, and it's a terrible atmosphere for making decisions. But verse 2 says that Sarai says to Abram, "Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her." And then notice, "And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai." In all of this, Abram listens to the voice of his wife. Now, I don't want to go on record as saying it's a bad idea to listen to the voice of your wife. But in this case, not a good decision. It does not say that Abram listened to the voice of the Lord. Again, no mention of God involved in this at all, which fits another bad decision made a couple of chapters ago. And so he's listening to the voice of his wife, and in this particular case, it's not a good voice to be listening to. She's blaming God for the problem of childlessness. And here also, she's got a solution. God has a problem. God has made promises, and there's a clever solution, no doubt, that God has for the problem. But Sarah's suggesting something else. And so he says, "Here's this Egyptian handmaid. Go in and father a child with her." Now, we read something like that, and that has a tendency to be kind of shocking in our culture. And to say, this is pretty outrageous. Abraham's a man of faith, and this doesn't sound like a very good situation. We want to clarify that this was not terribly unusual in that particular culture. And it's also good to point out that Abraham lived about 430 years ahead of the giving of the Old Testament law. And so God's clear right and wrong statements have not so much been made. And here's a man who's developing in faith. And so he certainly has not arrived yet. And so while this might seem a little bit shocking to us, in that culture, it really wasn't all that shocking. So verse 4, I want you to notice that verse 4 points out that more than just a child is conceived through this very bad decision. It says, "Abram went in to Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight." And so here's Sarai has turned over her handmaiden to Abram. Now she's pregnant, and Sarah all these years has not been able to bear a child, and so now there's a certain amount of contempt. And I think about the dynamics of what's going on in this family. It fits so well a particular passage of Scripture that I just got to bring in. Proverbs chapter 30, verses 21 to 23. I think as I read these verses, you'll see how well they fit this dilemma that we've just read about. The writer of Proverbs says, "Under three things the earth quakes, and under four it cannot bear up. Under a slave when he becomes a king, and a fool when he is satisfied with food, under an unloved woman when she gets a husband, and a maidservant when she supplants her mistress." It's exactly what's going on here. The maidservant Hagar has now supplanted Sarai, the wife of the house. And so I think that passage fits pretty well. Things only get worse for Abram and his family. Verse 5 says, "And Sarai said to Abram, 'May the wrong done me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me.'" Wow. What a situation. Sarai is now blaming Abram for something that she suggested. And I guess if anybody thinks polygamy is a good arrangement, just think about what we've just read here. We sort of have two wives now, and there's a real problem between those two wives. So this is obviously not a good situation at all. And so Sarah's upset because this handmaid now is pregnant with his child. She would love to bear his child, but here she's well along in years. That hasn't happened. And so now there's this thing going on between these two women. And so she's kind of heaping it onto Abraham and said, you know, may you be at fault in this whole situation. May the wrong that's done to me now be upon you. Talk about irrational. What's a guy supposed to do? I'm starting to feel real sorry for Abram. And so he's in a real dilemma. And so what is he supposed to do? What he should do is not what he did. Because I want you to look in verse 6. It says, now Abram said to Sarai, behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her what is good in your sight. So Sarai treated her harshly and she fled from her presence. See what Abram's doing? Not my problem. She's your handmaid. She's your servant. You two women have a problem, you deal with it. And so he turns it back over to her, and so Sarai treats her harshly and she heads out of Dodge. And so that seems to be the way Abram handles the whole situation. Passes the buck on to her. Verses 7 to 12, as we look on down, I'm not going to read those verses, but pregnant Hagar flees into the wilderness. We're told that an angel visits her and tells her that she ought to return. Verses 10 to 12 talk about that the child that she is going to bear is Abram's son, and there are certain promises that are made concerning him. And so we notice here that the angel says, behold, you are with child, and you will bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael. And I read those words, and I thought, you know, they sound an awful lot like words we read somewhere else, where it says in Luke chapter 1, verse 31, behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall name him Jesus. Those words sound pretty similar. They have the authority of God as those words are spoken. And so here Hagar is going to bear the child of Abram, a child of promise. You're going to bear this child and his name is going to be called Ishmael. And so there are certain things that are going to be true concerning him. Verse 12, a very, very interesting verse, as it describes what kind of man Ishmael is going to be. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of all his brothers. This is the lasting legacy we have even today of a very bad decision by Abram and Sarai. Because Ishmael is the father of the Arab peoples. We know about the Middle East situation that's always going on and nobody ever figures out how to solve it. It dates back to this time, to this man Ishmael, who is a wild donkey of a man, it says. How his hand is against everyone, everyone's hand against him. Doesn't that sound like what his descendants are still doing today? And so the Daily News deals with this very, very bad decision by Abram at that time. Verses 13 and 14. It says concerning Hagar that then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, you are a God who sees. For she said, have I even remained alive here after seeing him? An angel of the Lord has visited her, but she realized that God is behind this. She calls upon the name of God, presumably Yahweh, but she also calls him the God who sees. She recognizes this quality concerning him. He is the God who sees. Nothing escapes his notice. And even in her situation, she realized there is the one true God who sees all and who knows all and who's working in her life and active concerning her. And so she makes that recognition a wonderful thing. There's some great life lessons out of this rather unfortunate chapter in Abraham's life. And the very first one is the danger of presumptuous decisions. Doesn't that just stand out loud and clear with what we're looking at here? A presumptuous decision that we today are living with that Abram and Sarai made. Again, sometimes problems seem much bigger than the God that we believe in. And I think that was the case with Abram and Sarah, that they saw the problem of childlessness. And how's God going to work this out? We need to figure it out because God hasn't brought forth a solution. And that's the way it seems with us sometimes, that the problems seem very, very big, and you know, maybe God just somehow is not able to bring about a solution, so we better do what we think is best. And that certainly is what they did. And so there is the danger of a presumptuous decision, and I'm sure every one of us in this room have made at least one in our lifetime as well. A second great lesson that we see here is blaming God for the problem rather than trusting Him for the solution, as Sarah did. And I think that lesson pretty well explains itself. There's not too much that needs to be said. Just don't do that. Don't blame God for the problems, because God is the God of solutions, not the God of problems. Thirdly, listening to the voice beside us instead of His voice inside us. Again, I'm not saying don't listen to your spouse, but sometimes our spouse or a family member or a close friend will give us some advice. Someone who loves us and cares about us, the advice they will give seems sincere, but it will be out of step with the plan and the will of God. Again, they have our best interest in mind, but they're out of sync with what God wants. I think the hardest advice not to take is the misguided advice of someone who loves us. And that certainly was the issue that Abram faced in this story. And again, many times that's the dilemma we face. Someone who really cares about us gives us advice, and we know it doesn't ring with the voice of God. It's very difficult to reject that advice. Fourthly, I see here a lesson about staying focused on the God who sees. God who sees all and knows all. Indeed, that we also remain focused on the God who sees. He knows that there are needs. He knows that there are challenges that we face. And we need to continually stay focused on that God who eventually brings about His solution. Like Hagar, He would call us to return and to submit to the plan and the will of God. And I think of 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 and 7, which says, "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you." And thus it is with the God who sees, that we come to humble ourselves under His mighty hand, because God will exalt us even as He would exalt Abram and Sarai in due time. And so we also are called to cast our care upon Him, because He does care about us, and He sees and He knows whatever dilemma it is that we face.